Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, we began the programme yesterday in El Finn. Savage break-in and long-term effects on the family. And the Gardaí told us there was no reports of any other break-ins on that day. Well, we have one already this morning nearby El Finn. And now we're going to Enniscrone in County Sligo. Annette Queenan. Annette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Well, how are you? It happens this day, six weeks ago. Around what time?
Between 4:20 and 4:55.
Wow. Okay. What happened?
Well, myself and my husband, we decided we'd go to the bog and we parked. We own minibuses and we parked two minibuses out to the front gate.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into the car and went to the bog. And the next thing, about 43, 45 minutes in the bog, when our daughter rang us to say that we were after being broken into.
Wow.
And she thought they were still in the house,
They
had gone out. When she opened the back door, they ran out the front door. So we came home to see a house that you would never imagine that was our house.
Tell us.
It was ransacked from top to bottom. They'd done every bedroom. They even went up in the attic, took two of the floorboards up to see. I'd say they were looking for a safe, I presume.
Yeah.
It's just horrific. It's such an invasion of your house.
And in yesterday's case as well, they went up into the attic, by the way, and then they also poured, I don't know, was there bleach? Or any
they didn't get a chance, Joe, to do our house that day because Alana. Alana came in on them.
When Anna saw them running, how many did she see running?
She didn't see, she just heard the door closing.
Okay.
There was two of them. Because we had cameras. There was two of them. And while they were waiting on the car to come, they had hid between the two buses at the main road.
Right.
And we can hear them on our camera talking, and they can hear our daughter at the back door roaring and crying.
Oh,
it's horrific to hear it.
Oh, my God.
It's so horrible. And it has left us devastated, five of us. It's a home. It's not our home. It's a house. It's not our home yet until, you know, I don't know how to explain it, Joe. It's such a horrific thing to happen. Your home after 32 years.
To be violated. It's
an invasion of your whole private life.
So they got away, they did yesterday, in yesterday's call. In El Finn, they got away with jewellery, some money.
Yeah, the same in our.
Okay.
The same. They even, my daughter had a Connacht medal. They took that.
Ah.
You know, sentimental values that we will never get anything back. But we'll get over it. But it's just invasion of your house.
And do you feel your house is contaminated by them, or?
Yes, and we're not safe in our house. I feel like we haven't let any of our children, our grown-up adults, into the house unless one of us are there to meet them. It's just our house isn't safe anymore, and it's horrible, horrible.
And did they leave any... Yesterday they really destroyed the house. Did they do any other damage to the house? In other words,
The filing cabinet, they broke the bottom door to get all the other doors open. They broke a wardrobe door. Like, whatever they couldn't get open, they just smashed. It was just horrific. I couldn't explain it, Joe, what was left behind. They went to the hot press. They threw the suitcases down out of the attic and they emptied all the clothes that was in it.
Scouring, as they did with Anne in Roscommon, in El Finn and Roscommon. They were scouring everywhere. In Anne's case, they broke open the weighing scales, thinking there might be money hidden in it. they pulled the backs off. Anyway, sounds very similar way of operating.
The
Gardaí.
Yeah, the Gardaí. Like I won't complain about the Gardaí. There really isn't enough manpower.
Yeah.
But the only thing, like, we will eventually, John and myself and our three children will eventually get over it. You know, it'll take time.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to make that we are safe in our house again, and it'll take time to bring that back to us. But like, it's an elderly person. They would never get over it if this happened then.
Of course.
So I'd like it to be made more aware if it's a break-in in an area that there's more manpower put into that area or whatever, but let people know. And the most important thing I would ask people to do is to make aware of the importance of having a camera and alarm in their houses.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing this at night time. They're doing it during the day now.
Broad daylight. So brazen. And Annette, you say in your contact with us that you wash down the whole house.
Yeah, I have. To be honest with you, Joe, we burned a lot of clothes.
Wow. Why?
It's just your invasion, your whole privacy. Your whole privacy is taken off you.
Ah. So when they emptied all the drawers and empty suitcases, you felt that the clothes were contaminated by the thieves.
Yeah, like our personal little things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like I didn't go burning everything, but we burned a lot of stuff. We bought a lot of stuff back in. You know, personal things you wear.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but they had as well. When they came into our house, whatever they were taking, they went into my daughter's house, my daughter's room.
Yeah.
And left everything on the bed and they closed the curtains and pulled down the blind.
So what were they doing? Going through everything? Throwing everything into their sorting office, which is your daughter's bedroom.
Yeah.
And they were going through to see could they find any hidden money.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything they had taken, they were going to take, and they had it all lined up in the bed because that's where all the jewellery was there. The jewellery didn't want, they just threw it on the ground. You know, that's where the sorting area was. And it's just, I don't know, Joe, I our life has been turned upside down.
Yeah. And did the Gardaí indicate that there have been any other robberies of this type?
There was one in Enniscone, I think, just before us.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman in Bunnycondon. So there was three robberies in the space of a couple of hours, I think.
Oh, wow. And anyone spotted any cars or any... Is there neighbourhood watching your area, Annette?
There is, yeah.
Okay.
There is. There is.
And is that like, helpful?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. I personally, I thought we might get a public meeting up and going and just, you know, get all the TDs and just say, look, this is happening. This is happening at 4:20 in the daytime. We're on the main road between Eastgate and Enniscone. Our buses are always on the road, in and out.
Okay.
So they were brave and even to come in our gate.
Yeah. And you mentioned to me you put the two buses at the gate. Were you blocking the gate?
No,
just the way you park. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because we were coming home, of course, with a load of turf.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and so you needed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we needed. So, and they're normally never parked outside the main road. They're never parked outside the wall. They're normally parked in the yard. But like, we're in and out every so often.
Yeah,
our buses are in now.
Of course, on the run. But doing the run. I'm just wondering, does any community, I know Neighbourhood Watch is brilliant, but given technology now, does any community use, it would have to be a pretty big one, a WhatsApp group for watching out for suspicious activity? And does it work?
No.
The group would have to be too big that it might become totally cumbersome.
Yeah, that would be a good idea, because if you've seen anything suspicious in the area, at least you couldn't, or ring people or get in contact with the Garda to say, look, you know, these people are acting suspicious.
Yeah.
And it might stop an awful lot of it.
Yeah.
But by the looks of things, Joe, these people aren't afraid.
Well, that's what I'd be worried about, you see, if you did confront them.
Yeah, these things,
they're so confident of getting away And yesterday's robbery was daylight as well. They're so confident to get away that they just broke into your house in the afternoon and set up a sorting office in your daughter's bedroom to go through all the stuff they could find to look for money in it.
Yeah.
Piece by piece.
Yeah. Wow. And whatever they didn't want, they just threw it.
But I know, and I know you have a line here which is very strong. It has destroyed us as a family. But Annette, you're going, well, you must be talking about it. You'll have to, sorry, you will. No, that's what you have to know. You will hopefully get over it.
Yeah, and we will. We will. And, you know, it's just that you're afraid of coming home. Like, yeah, as soon as I get to the gate now, the first thing I look at, is there any blind down? Any curtain closed? We will. It'll take us time, Joe, but we will get back as a family. Yeah, and our house... Okay. Our home. It'll be our home again.
Yeah, and then
it really will be our home.
Just now, I presume what's in your head as well, Annette, is that we run a little company, a bus company, great reputation. They think there's money in this house.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because most of the. Most of the burglars, they're just opportunistic. They're mooching around looking for an open gate, no dog maybe. But then people feel, oh God, they must have been watching my house for weeks. And they weren't. They're gone. They're in. They're as gone as quick as they came in and they won't come back. But it's very hard to convince people of that, isn't it?
Very hard. Very hard to think that they left in a scone and just pinpointed our house. I'm finding it very hard to take that in, but it probably is. They probably just done that and hoping for the best when they came to the front door. There was no one there.
Yeah. Okay, stay with us, Annette. Joe at rt.ie, 51551. Is David there? David Matthews. Are you gone, David? He was on my screen 2 seconds ago. You come back to me, David. Okay, he's going to turn off his radio, but David is I think, going to tell. David Matthews in Shankill in Dublin, I presume.
Hey,
David.
Hey, David. I am, Joe, yeah.
Yeah, tell us, David, what happened.
David.
Your radio needs to go, yeah. Okay, take a quick break, please. Stay with us, Annette. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Again, break-ins. David Matthews in South Dublin. What happened, David?
Well, I've experienced this on 4 occasions.
Wow.
One in a house I lived in Churchtown.
Yeah.
It was a wee Easter weekend, and my wife and I had been out, and we popped down to see my mum and dad before we went up to Donegal for the weekend.
Right.
But while we were out, they must have been watching or whatever, and broke in and literally destroyed the place.
My
you
gosh.
Know, yeah. Even defecated on the carpet.
Oh, my gosh.
Urinated over a bed in one of the bedrooms. Used big white felt pens on the wallpaper and whatever. And other damage, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm told not to use the word, a four-letter word begin with R, but however, that's how I felt as a result of it, as did my first wife at that time.
Yeah.
And then when we moved to Shankill here, we were no length here when we had a couple of attempted break-ins.
Right.
And one of them with a gun. And they had tried to hold up the Texaco garage that's just on the road beside me here.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to hold it up as a 24-hour Texaco station. But fortunately, they smashed the glass, the little glass for the guy on the teller minding things.
Yeah, yeah.
And he managed to dart into a side room so they couldn't get at him again.
Okay.
But anyway, the Gardaí were called, I think, because of the intrusion into the petrol station. Probably an alarm or the guy pressed the button or something. And they arrived on the spot, and the guys came around the back and along the back wall between me and it and the house number one as you come up for a cul-de-sac from the main road. And they tried then to break into me here. But what I woke up seeing was a guard walking along my back wall. I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. But anyway...
They were looking for this guy. And after that, who had a gun?
The fella came around.
He tried
to... The guard jumped down and he was looking for him, but the man escaped over my dividing wall to next door and did a runner. But he's taken some stuff like a very high quality recording machine and whatever. Yeah. But anyway, the guard says, "Oh, we have what we want," he says. He damaged his hand on smashing the glass into the garage. And he's been leaving a trail of red stuff all along. So we have what we want.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, for DNA or whatever. So, no, I never did. I think he went to prison, right?
No, did he? Okay.
They did, and he was put away for
David, come back to that break-in where they destroyed the house. They defecated, they urinated, they wrote on walls, they... ripped things off. How did you redress all that? How did you get over that? I mean, even physically, what did you have to do?
Well, I tell you, you're gutted, you know, after this happened. Because, now, as I said, I'm told not to use the word begin with R, a four-letter word, but that's how it felt to me. Each time,
you felt you were violated.
All the pockets of my jackets and trousers were all left hanging out to make sure they'd emptied them all of anything that might be there.
Who did the cleanup of the house? The awful, obnoxious damage.
We did it ourselves. Piecemeal, you know.
But
you know, in a way, you just wanted to run away and not come back, you know, to the house. Because, as I say, these scum, you know, that do these things, you know, and had been through everything and all the rest. In our main bedroom, we had a small TV on the wall with a video player underneath, and they ripped that off the wall altogether and left a big hole in the wall. And other things, you know, it's only beginning to come back to me now. Other things that I'd nearly forgotten about.
Yeah.
But you never fully get over it.
I was going to say that. And did you live in that house? Well, a lot of people have no choice.
I lived in that. Yeah.
Did you live there
for very long? Yes.
Okay, but did you live there for long afterwards?
Yes, I suppose we would have lived quite a long time. Yeah, maybe 10 years or so.
And I don't know whether you heard Annette there, David, Annette's above in Sligo, talking about her. She feels her family life has been destroyed by this violation of her house as well. By this.
And so, she is indeed. Yeah. You know, my wife at that time now with the Lord, kind of, you know, she left me in 1994 for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. As did my second wife there in 2020, just before the COVID. Mary didn't really want to come back to that house in Churchtown again, you know, and was afraid that every time we went out or whatever, that, you know, you wouldn't know what you'd find when you came back again.
Yeah.
So now I have a monitored alarm here now. I didn't in Churchtown, because I'd installed the alarm system myself, you know, after that event. But anyway, just when I heard that there today, it really just appalls me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Okay.
And the break in and what they did in my house, like, you know, they could have used the loo or the bathroom or whatever, you know, and they didn't need to do what they did.
It seems to be a phenomenon, this whole thing of defecating and urinating in public, not in the bathroom, but when you break in, I don't know what overcomes.
No.
Okay. Thanks indeed. That's David Matthews and Annette Queen and Bove and Sligo. Thank you both. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Lisa Kenny is on the line. Lisa's contacted us. It's your daughter, like so many, has just got her Leaving Cert results and she could not have done better.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Lisa, yeah. She got top marks.
Yeah, she opened her CO thing on Friday morning and was absolutely over the moon. She actually got 7 H1s. I mean, she's very proud. She didn't want to tell anyone, but that's what she got. And she worked so hard for it, and she deserved it.
Yeah, and that's
so came to.
That's 625 pints.
25, yeah. And it came then to her Monday, whatever day, they got the email to look at the results. And actually, when she looked at that, she realised that she got 65 on her own without the grade inflation. You know, she got 65 without the extra point, extra percentage that was added to other people's marks. So when Sarah was in transition year, she, like any student, she is a great student. She did her research and she looked into all the things she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And she went to open days in fifth year and she went to UCD, and this was her course, economics and finance.
Okay.
She'd done so much research into the course to see was it the course for her, because she didn't want to pick the wrong course. Her dad went up with her. She came out of the lecture hall and the guy in the lecture hall explained the whole course. It's going to be a tough course. It's this, it's that. It went through everything. And Sarah came out and I asked Bob, how did she get on? And he said, she is on a bosom. This is the course for her. This is what she'll... For the next 2 years, she studied so hard. This was her aim in life. This is what she wanted. And then she got the email on Monday to say she didn't get it because of lotto.
And it was a lottery. Even though she could not have got any more points.
Any better. No.
And nobody...
And she got it on her own merit, without the extra grades added. She got it. So she got 70. So she got that with hard work and dedication and motivation that she put in. Like, I'm so proud of her. But she deserved the course. And it comes down to her name being pulled out of a hat. That's what it comes down to. It's so unfair. Like, it just comes basically to throw the names in hat and whatever comes out. It should come down to merit, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, they all got 65, whatever. But let's look at this bunch of people that got the 65. Who deserves the most? Like, who? Like, it has to, because if the course is 65, it's not 618, it's not 613 or whatever it is. It's 65, so you have to get that. So to dwindle down to the people who get onto that course, it should be a fair system as well. It has to look at the grades and say, right, she got this, she got this, and give it according to the merit, not by pulling their name out of a hat. It is just disgusting. It's just so cruel. It really, really is. Like, I have a son going into fifth year now, and how I can, work hard. Like, but you'll get what you... But there's Sarah after working so hard, and it comes down to pulling her name out of the hat. Like, really, she's just went from being so excited and so proud to just purely deflated. Like, it just...
Did Sarah realise she had not got the course?
When the offers all came out yesterday at 2 o'clock, she opened her email and she saw it and she just was gutted. Like, literally, we're all gutted. Like, we're so disappointed in the cruelty of it, the unfairness of the system. Mm-hmm. That's what we're... Like, she worked hard, so did everyone else. And her marks was what she deserved. And someone else's marks what this. But when it comes down to a small bunch of people looking, like, there's only, I think, 20 people looking extra on that. Should they put it down to merit of the people being picked on their merit, or else add an extra few spots? Like, add the extra few places in. But not, like, some people maybe on that court got less than what she is. Like, but it can't come down to a lotto. Like, it can't come to names in a hat. Yeah. Sorry, you didn't get picked out of the hat. Like, well, that is the most cruelest way of picking, being allocated a spot on a course. I really do think that's very, very
unfair. And, of course, they point to the fact that COVID and the results of the leave and cert 1 year were estimated by teachers. There was no leave and cert as such. Mm-hmm. And now they're trying to recalibrate the sequence. So everything is not out of kilter. But like the Irish Times, Carl O'Brien in the Irish Times points out that in this year, 1,000 students got 6 to maximum number of points available, 625, that's 1.6%. Whereas in 2019, before COVID, Only 200 students got the maximum number of points. That's 0.4. Yeah, that's your point. Yeah, okay.
That, yeah, she would have been that 200.
Even when, so she drilled in, yeah.
Yeah, so the grade inflation has been a disadvantage. It's cost her place. Like, I mean, it's cost because she would have got it. Because there's other people that got 65 because the grade. And it's probably, that has to be a fair way of picking those small group that are put on the course, because it should be down to merit, not your name out of a hat. Like, that is just so unfair. Wow. Like, it's just so unfair.
And I know the letter that...
Lucky did. After all the hard work. Like, that is just disgusting. Like, it's not... Like, how can we motivate our children? Like, she wants to work hard. She's so motivated to work hard in college. This is what she wants to do in life.
Yeah. And as you say in the family letter that you sent to UCD, Sarah could not have worked harder or achieved a higher grade. Think about that. Yet she sits at home today crying her eyes out, disappointed, gutted, disillusioned in the Irish education system that she cannot fulfil her dreams. And how is she today?
Well, she has to go to work. She's working in Frankfurt and Wexford, and they're very good to her. She got up. She had her shower, she had a breakfast, but she's just deflated. This was her course. She really looked into it. Yeah. This is what she really wanted. It's not that, oh,
and
the
she
course.
Did. She did exactly everything that was expected of her to get on that course. She could not have physically or on paper and the exams have done any better. End of.
She got 65 on her own merit without any extra grade added. And so it has to come down to not a name of a hat. That is just so cruel. It's just so gutted. Like, she put all the work in and her name didn't come out of a hat. For what? To put your name in? It has to be a fair way. It's not fair. It is so not fair. Like, I really don't think that's fair.
Did she get
it can't be fair.
Well,
I'm
quoting the Minister for Higher Education, Patrick O'Donovan, and he said yesterday he was satisfied that the CAs satisfied with the CAO system, describing it as fair and equitable.
But that's not fair. Me and Gunning haven't been pulled out after all the hard work. Like, we tried to give our kids the best in education and they work hard. Like, she put so much work into it, like all the other students. They all deserve what they worked for. And it got their points. They deserve that place. Not put your name in a hat and pull it out and sorry, your name didn't come out of the hat. It's like a toss of a coin. That's what her came down to, toss of a coin. Do you mean it's just so unfair?
I know you said, Lisa, that Sarah was deflated. She must be devastated.
She's gutted. She just doesn't want... She just... it like it just and she's such a great girl and she really trying to take it on the chin, but like, it's a really hard pill to swallow for her. Like, after she worked so hard and she enjoyed her life, she had great friends. And she worked and she had great social nights. Like, she did a mixture of both. She enjoyed it. She had enjoyed life. She was buzzing for her next chapter in life. This was it. She worked so hard for this and she was so enthusiastic about this course. This was her course. It's not as if she just picked it out thin air. This is what she really, really wanted. This is made for, like she said, this course is made. She was so willing to work so hard. Like, she was going to go to college.
And
she
Lisa, does Sarah, how her other friends, any of them in the same position?
A lot of them are in the same. Lots of people are in the same situation. Look, Sarah hasn't really spoken to her friends. She doesn't want, like, people, you don't want to pry what you get. Some people just want
to know.
It's only the initial week. But she is disappointed. Like, she's so gutted. And
did she get? Did she get a second offer?
She did. Got a second offer in a UCC with finance, which she doesn't want to go to. Like, she just was her course. This course really was. She said was for. This is what she worked. This is what she really, really, really wanted. Like, this is what she worked with for the last two years of her life. She dedicated herself to, and she couldn't have done anything. She got what she needed first, and more than anyone else. And
so
it comes down to her name being pulled out of the hat. Like, it's really unfair, Joe.
So she was hoping to come to, well, UCD, which is obviously beside
us
here.
She wants to go to, she loves, Dublin, she wants to come to UCD. Her friend, all of her friends come to UCD. She wants to join the sailing club up there. She had it all. Like, she just, she was going to enjoy life. She was really, really excited for life. She was really, really excited about this next chapter. Like, she couldn't have been more excited. And she just, like, so deflated. Like, it's just, it's so hard to see. Like, she put so much work in.
And do we know how many, you say there are 20 people on a waiting list who got 625.
Yeah, for the course.
Wow.
Yeah, on the,
and
for the course.
And many places are available on the course, do you know?
I think 50, maybe I'm wrong, but I think 50.
So
I don't know, why can't they put the extra few places on it? Like, this is the Irish education system. Like, these pupils have worked all the way up to the system, from junior infants up. Like, and I have a son come behind me, and everyone else's kids come behind me, and they see what's happening to this. There's no motivation for the younger children coming behind them.
How can you
going to say, why will I work so hard when I just get deflated,
even when I get maximum punishment? Let's hope it's sorted out. I heard the minister on this morning, Norma Foley. It's not changing this year.
Next year either. No, I'm not changing for next year either. So.
Yeah.
And
she kept pointing back to the pandemic and the whole upheaval.
Yeah, the pandemic's over now. We need to bring it back to normal. Do you mean bring it back down to normal grade so everyone has a fair chance? You know, it's just unfairness of that. I know, like Sarah didn't sit her junior cert, and she did sit the mocks and she found it helpful. But she did sit summer exams into her school for the junior cert. A little bit of disadvantage, but junior.
And Lisa, how long will you hold out hope for yourself and Sarah and your family?
Well, then the second round is coming out on the 9th, so I don't know. She thinks there's absolutely no hope. I just really don't want to see her hopes getting up, because I really can't see her being disappointed again. But I don't think, I don't see 20 people. They can say no to the place like
course,
that.
Our chances
are very great.
So the only option is to increase the number of places on the course.
Yeah, or get some way of merit, allocate the place according to merit, a fair place. And pulling on a lotto system, it's just not fair for students who put so much work in to say it came down to my name being pulled out of the hat.
Yeah.
It's so unfair.
Okay.
It's just not.
And then what are you
right.
thinking, Lisa, that just the straight marks should be added up?
Like say there's 70 for that course.
I know, because
sit down and look at those 70
H1 for example is within a certain band, isn't it?
At them and
you say drill down into the individual marks.
Yeah,
and that.
Look,
okay.
And whoever deserved it most, that's the fair, because all the courses are allocated that way. Whoever deserved the most down to merit, you have to get this point to get this course. You have to get this point to get this course. So if there comes to a stage like that, it's not to pull out of a hat. Look at those individual students and decide, let's look at, like, merit. Who worked harder? Who got these grades? Who got them? Because it's hard work to get those grades. An extra 10%, say, from a 90 to a 96, 97. That's a lot of work.
Good
that
point,
is dedication.
Good point.
You can't just throw that away saying, we'll put you in a hat. That is a lot, like... That is so much work to get those extra points, and it's so much determination for someone to work. And now her work is just, why did I bother? Like she said, why did I bother? Like, really, she's gutted. Like, truly gutted. We all are. And, like, she's a great girl, and she deserves it like everyone else deserves the place. But she worked so hard, and she got the points on her own merit without the extra grade, and she still hasn't got it. You know,
and I'm just thinking, the only thing I can hear is Simon Harris, who was a very good minister for higher education, very forthright and straight, and called it what he's been calling everything as he sees it, in fairness, since he took over. And he might intervene, but that's
but if they had his son or daughter in the same situation, maybe they should think how unfair.
Well, the thing we have, and Sarah, I know. I'm talking to her mother, but Sarah feels like the end of the world for you. It's not.
Yeah.
Hopefully something. Hopefully something will be redressed, because it's such.
But it's
such an obvious. I know. Here, it is such an obvious injustice. And such an obvious injustice.
Her career came down to pulling name of a hat.
Yeah, but her career, but Lisa, Sarah's life and her career and her chances go on. They go on, Sarah. I'm speaking to her if she's listening. They will go on. You've done incredibly well. This is a this is a major knock in terms of your course. Let's hope this hurdle can be removed very, very quickly. But just you're going to have to rely, Sarah. And Lisa, and a lot of your inner strength, and it's a form of, unfortunately, it's an awful form of education in terms in terms of knocks that we all get in life. But anyway, it's a very unfair, unjust situation. Yeah. Lisa, kind regards to you and your great family.
Thank you.
Congratulations to Sarah. Congrats! It's a magnificent achievement. It's a magnificent achievement.
And thanks and congratulations to all the students. Yeah. Did so well. Thank you.
Well, and thank you for saying that as well. Thank you, Lisa. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It's one of the biggest phenomena on YouTube at the minute, wild camping. So when we were contacted by Angela Lawson from Leicestershire, the UK, and she told us she wanted to speak about her wild camping in Ireland beginning in Clonegal, at the start, which is in Carlow, isn't it? Started the Wicklow way. Angela, good afternoon.
Hi there, Joe. Thank you for having me on the radio.
Very good. Tell us why. Why?
Why did I do it?
Yes, yes.
What, the whole 82 miles?
Yes.
It was a challenge. It was a challenge from my dad.
Okay.
My dad's an Irishman. He's from County Mayo in Ballycroy.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, I'm going to... I was going to Switzerland and... on my own and doing the, not wild camping, nothing like that. But then he said, I'm going to set you a challenge. He said, will you do it? And I said, yeah, what is it? He says, will you do the Wicklow Way in Ireland?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And then when I explored it, Googled it, I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to wild camp it. So that's what I did.
And what
I wild camped the whole way.
And Angela, what is your explain to listeners what wild camping means?
Well, you just get your backpack. You've got your tent.
Yeah.
You've got your tent, you've got your sleeping bag, you've got your sleeping mat.
Yeah.
And you just, that's it, you just get it all in your backpack and then find a spot to camp.
Okay, day one, you began in Clonegal. By the way, I know you climbed Croagh-Patrick in your dad's home county.
Yeah, I climbed Croagh-Patrick on the Saturday.
Yeah.
I arrived in Westport on the 2nd, climbed Croagh-Patrick on the 3rd of August.
Yeah.
4th of August, I went to see my family, which I've never met before, in Ballycroy. So can I give them a mention? Sure. PJ, Josie, the dad, Paddy, and the rest of the family.
Yeah, okay.
So I've never met them before. And then the 5th, I travelled to Buncloddy.
Okay.
And then started the Wicklow Way on the 6th. But my aim was to get to the Dying Cow pub. But my legs for that first day, carrying a heavy backpack, which was nearly 17 kilogram in weight, I just couldn't do it. So I just found a spot in the field.
So how many miles did you do on day one before the knees went?
I think it must have been about 12.
Okay. And at what stage did you start looking for a spot to camp?
Well, that day was about 7:30 in the evening.
Okay, wow.
Because I had to keep stopping, taking some breaks. So it was about 7:30 in the evening. I just thought, you know what, my legs can't go anymore.
And
so I just found a field with sheep.
Okay. And Angela, are you choosy about, when you're that tired, are you choosy about where you're going to camp?
No, you just don't care at that point. You're just so tired. You just want to just get in your tent and just go sleep.
Okay. So you found a nice spot. And
the first night, yeah.
And did you sleep?
It was the perfect spot.
Did you sleep?
Yeah, I did. I woke up in the morning and my tent was surrounded by sheep.
Okay.
But I love sheep. I don't, as long as it wasn't cows. And then on the Wednesday...
No, 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 come back. Angela, hang on. You woke up in the morning, all the sheep peering in at you. What about breakfast and food and hot food? How do you manage for that when you're wild camping?
Oh, I had my stove. I had a camping stove strapped to the back of my bag. So I had my camping stove and I'd got, like, you know, these meals that you could buy for, like, wild camping.
Okay.
Base camp food. Right. So I had a few packs of them. So I just heated that up in the morning.
And what did they taste like?
Not very nice. There was supposed to have been a cooked breakfast, like fully cooked breakfast all in a packet, but it wasn't very nice.
Okay. I'm sure that other way, I know wild camping sounds brilliant, but I'm sure even, could you not have, I don't know whether you eat meat or whatever, but you could have fried up some sausages beforehand and reheated them on your little primer stove. But anyway, okay, we're now into day two and you're following the Wicklow Way signs. How did you do on day two?
Day two, I got to the Dying Cow.
Okay, that's the
pub. And I thought, I'm not moving from here. I said to people, I says, can I camp in the grounds? And they said, yeah, we've got a hut that you can sleep in or pitch up your tent. Yeah. And I must say, the facilities they've got there, they've got their own toilet on the back for you to use. You've got your shower. You've mm-hmm. got a little kitchen. And their pizzas, I had a pizza and I thought, I've never had a full pizza to myself ever. But that pizza, I devoured it.
And in the journey to the Dying Cow, what was that like? Just walking through the mountains and the fields.
It was through the fields. It was over a mountain. You come into it was just basically roadway for that. But it was a nice place. I'm glad I stayed there the night.
Okay, so that's.
I didn't have to pitch up my tent. I just slept in the hut and. I pitched up my sleeping bag and just got on the bench and you're that tired. You just went to sleep.
And again, you slept like a log.
That night I did, yes. Yeah, another night I slept like a log.
Okay, so up the next day?
Yeah, the third day, which would be the 8th.
On the third day, she rose again, Yes?
I had breakfast again, but this one was a bit nicer.
Thank God.
It was a different base camp food, but it was a bit nicer. And I had that and then set off. And I set off up to the Molokai hut, I think it's called. It's the first hut on the way. There's three huts along the route. And it was the first hut. And I met this lovely German couple up there. They was camping up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got talking. And, yes, I pitched my tent up and had another good night's sleep going up towards the mountain. So I did sleep quite well them three nights.
You sure did. But did you what about safety, Angela? Did you worry about
That's
safety?
That's another thing. Everyone kept saying to me, because I was doing it solo. I did it all by myself, wild camp the whole way. And everyone kept saying to me, aren't you scared?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, not really. No, I didn't. I felt really safe up there. I did feel really safe.
Wow.
And even during the day, up until I went to Glenmalure, I didn't hardly pass anybody, really.
So is it not lonely?
I was just enjoying the peace, you know, listening to the sheep and listening to the birds. And it was just nice and peaceful.
And do you have a mobile phone? Do you listen to music? Or I know you can't beat the music at a board.
No, I didn't listen to any music. I just enjoyed the peace. But then I lost my cardigan. My cardigan dropped from my waist and it had my precious compass in it.
Oh, compass.
And I went back about half an hour. Yeah, yeah. And I went back about half an hour without me away and I couldn't find it.
Oh, God. Were you distraught?
I couldn't find it. Yeah, I was really cheerful because I was like, I relied on my compass as well as the sign. So I had to give it up as a bad job lost, really. And then I've got it back now because a lovely couple called Marie Rossiter and Liam, they read my story on the Wicklow Way about my losing my cardigan from the Dying Cow up to the mountain.
Yeah.
Bless them, they went out their way to find my cardigan.
They went
and they found it. Compass. They set off on the way from the Dying Cow, following my footsteps, and they found my cardigan.
Isn't that incredible?
I know, and they returned it to me. They wouldn't accept anything for going out the way to find the cardigan, and they wouldn't accept a penny towards the postage.
That's
so you don't get many couples like that. So that, you know, that warmed my heart to get my compass back and to think that there's people like that in the world. And there's another one, you know, when I went to Glenmalure Lodge. Yeah, I ordered a steak. Yeah, hungry. And I had a pint of shandy. And the Guinness was a bit too heavy, so I thought, I'll have a shandy.
Yeah, yeah.
And this couple was asking me all these questions about what I'm doing it, you know, why I'm doing it, how am I doing it alone, why aren't I scared? And they were just so amazed that when they left before me, they came over and they said, we're just so impressed with you and amazed that we've paid for your meal.
Oh.
So, yeah.
God, you'll have us all in tears, Angela.
I was in tears myself and then they gave me a hug. Yeah, because at that point, when you're not meeting hardly anybody and you're out there on your own and you're away from your family, it does get, things like that do get to you. And I did get emotional in the pub and I just thought, how nice.
Yeah. And you mentioned the pub there, the pub.
The Glenmalure Lodge, yeah, that's where I had my meal. But coming up from there, I found another night in another hut.
Okay.
And it was in the forest.
Right.
It was in dense forest, and I just thought, oh, there's nobody around. That's one night when I was thinking, oh, it's in dense forest. There's nobody around. There's nowhere to pitch my tent.
Yeah.
And the huts are open, so I had to sleep on my sleeping mat and my sleeping bag just in the hut.
Yeah.
In the open autumn, surrounded by forest.
And did you hear any noises at night, or did anything frighten you?
I was thinking, oh, what's going to go, you know, because, you know, there's no door on the hut or anything, it's all open. I was just thinking, oh, what's going to come and get me in the night?
Yeah.
What, not person, what kind of animal, but no, I woke up in the morning at 7 o'clock and I slept through. You're just so tired, I think.
And where was your dad, who was responsible for this challenge? Surely he was up all night worrying about his daughter, Angela, was he?
No, because he said to me, he says, I know you can do it. Well, actually, he said he did have his doubts. He says, carrying my backpack for that long. He said, I did think it halfway through you'd come down. I went, no, because I twisted my ankle halfway through as well.
Oh, no.
My ankle went over it. I think that was day four that was. And it was quite painful. But I just thought, you know what, you've got to ignore it because I'm not coming down. The only time I'd come down off that mountain is if I break my leg. So yeah, I just, it, and then
but
every day,
but the spraying
it kept giving way.
The spraying can be very, very frightening. But anyway, you kept going. By the way, before you started, Angela, what were you worried about most?
My backpack, carrying my backpack, because I'd never carried that weight before.
Okay. And how did that work out? How did that work out for
the first day? The first day, first 2 days, it was agony. It was digging into me. It was a nightmare trying to get used to the weight. I think it must have been about more. It must have been about 18, because I had to take some out. It was 20 at one point. I took a few things out. But then at the end, I could pick it up like a feather. Swing it over my shoulders.
And what about footwear?
I'd got some Scarpa boots, and I tell you what, I highly recommend them. They were the best boots ever. I didn't get blisters. The only thing was, my foot went over, and I think my boot supported my ankle from breaking.
Okay.
My ankle did give way a few times.
Well, were they brand new boots, in other words? Did you? Because I'm thinking of a story. There's a great broadcaster, journalist, person, all-round good egg called Vincent Brown in Ireland, and he used to present a late-night radio programme and a television programme and edit magazines and newspapers and still writes. But he set out as a challenge, again, I think, on his radio programme to walk the Wicklow Way, which is what you did. And with every respect and love and kindness and embrace to Vincent, he gave up, I think, after 48 hours because his feet were killing him. Because he'd bought a new pair of boots, which he'd never broken in, Angela, you see. Basic stuff. Okay. What surprised you most about the wild camping on the Wicklow Way? What were you pleasantly surprised by?
How easy I found it. I thought I was going to struggle poaching my tent up at night, packing it up in the morning. And the signpost, you know, there was so, you know, even at night, there was lit up. You know, the little yellow man and with a walking stick. So it's very well signposted. I mean, I did take a couple of long turns and I had to go back and find the yellow man and retrace my steps. And but I found it, I found it very well signposted.
And did your
And just the people that you, when you did meet people on the way, just how encouraging they were to you, saying, "Oh, come on, you can do it." And
fantastic.
Everyone was just so friendly.
And what about the weather? Were you lucky?
I was very lucky. Was very lucky, apart from the one night, that was on the Sunday. I have to get my dates right now. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That was the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. That would have been about the 11th.
Okay.
And I went to Glendalough, and I spent too long in Glendalough. Didn't realise how long it would take me to get up to the top of the mountain, and I was looking for the third hut, and it was about 11 o'clock at night. By the time I got up the mountain, it was 11 o'clock at night, and there was lightning.
Oh,
and I took a wrong turning. I missed the turning for the hut, and I was on top of the mountain looking for the hut, and I was just thinking, this is silly, it's getting on for midnight. I can't stumble around in the dark. It was getting the wind up, so I just had to pitch my tent on top of the mountain in the light with a torch. And I just made sure I pegged it down really well. But the wind kept me awake all night. The wind was knocking my tent. But
you're silly.
That was, I think that was my worst night. That was my worst night. That was when I was thinking, what the heck am I doing? But I woke up the next morning to the most spectacular view.
Ah, you see.
Oh, it was amazing, the view. That. And then I found my route. I found, oh, that's where it is. It's down the path down there. So I carried on and I passed my hut where I should have stayed.
So you did it. Many days did it take you to do the full Wicklow Way? It's 127 kilometres. Many days.
It took me 8 days because the last night, cause my family, my dad, my husband and my friend, Ivan, there was my dad, Patrick McCafferty, there was my husband, John Ross, and there was my friend, Ivan Roach. They all flew to Dublin to meet me at the Marley Park.
Yeah,
they had a great big banner waiting for me. So I just thought that night before, I'll stop at Knockry Hostel. The way. Yeah, I thought I'll stay there, freshen up, have a decent night's sleep. And the guy gave me an 8-bed dorm to myself.
Ah.
He says, and all my gear was wet. The night before, it had been raining, so all my gear were wet, so I could just dry it out. And then I reached Dublin about 5:30 on the 14th, and they had a great big banner and champagne waiting for me.
And what was your reaction?
I've got to say.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just crying. We were all crying. Because I'd been away from home since the 2nd, and I've never been away from home for that long, and I've never done anything like I've done on the Wicklow Way. I've never done anything like that in my life.
And what's your next challenge?
I've already studying it. I'm looking at the Kerry Way.
The Kerry Way, okay.
I'm looking at that. That's even longer.
And would you, insofar as up to people making their own mind up, but Angela, would you recommend it for solo female walkers and adventurers to do solo female wild camping trips?
I'd highly recommend it. I mean, that's why I wanted to come on because I know girls are saying, ladies are saying, oh, you're so brave, I can't do it. You can. You're so safe out there. You really are. I mean, I was never scared about anybody trying to attack me or anything. You're all up there for the same reason, to do the walking. You all encourage each other when you do pass. And even when you don't see anybody, you just enjoy the peace.
And you
try not to let your mind wander.
Yeah, but were you, wander to what? What would you be worried about?
Well, you're thinking, you just try not to let your mind wander, thinking, oh, could somebody be hiding somewhere and jump out. I mean, it was only when I went to Dublin, when I was coming home and the taxi driver said, you were brave, doing it on your own. I said, well, he said, there's been a few attacks up in the Wicklow Way years ago,
yeah.
So when I got home, I ordered the book. So the book arrived yesterday for me to read. It's not going to put me off. And it shouldn't put anybody off. I highly recommend females getting out there. Solo wild camping, doing the Wicklow Way for definite, because it's the best thing I've ever done.
But did you not get lonely, Angela?
No, not at all. I mean, I have a big family, around me, and I thought I might get lonely, but no, you just enjoy the peace.
Okay.
The quietness and the beauty of what's in front of you, the mountains and the waterfalls, you know.
And the sounds and the sounds and the smells and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I really miss it. I want to go back. I really miss being out there. When I came home, I was like, I really miss the mountains. I really miss getting up, because your bed is full of adrenaline in the morning. You know, you have to get up. And you're not eating properly. And you just do what you have to do.
Okay,
you just
so what did you miss most doing the Wicklow Way? What were you gagging for? Was it a shower? Was it a smell of a sausage and a rasher? Was it a piece of steak. Piece of steak, okay.
And then I got to Glenmalure Lodge and I seen steak on the menu and I thought, I've got to ask.
Yeah, well done. No better place. I
missed a piece of steak, yeah. And a pint of Guinness. As soon as I finished, after the champagne, we went to the pub and we were drinking Guinness.
Yeah.
Celebrated with Guinness.
So
but I would highly recommend.
So what do you do, Angela, finally, what do you do in real life?
What do you do? What, for a job?
Yeah, or whatever. What do you do when you're not wild camping?
Oh, well, my job is to look after children.
Yeah, great.
But none of my children. I thought my girls, because I've got three girls myself, and I thought they would have, at least one of them would have followed in my footsteps. But no, none of them have. None of them like climbing mountains or anything like that.
So you have three children?
Yeah.
Okay. What age are they? Do you mind me asking?
No, they're 33, 31 and 20. I had them young. I had the two oldest ones young.
You sound like a 20-year-old. And you have a 33-year-old.
Yeah, I've got to tell you this. When we got to the finishing point at Marley Park, because my dad had met me and my husband and my friend, and then they saw, I must have been the mountains, it must have been the mountains, it really must have done. They thought my husband was my dad. My dad was my granddad.
Brilliant.
Husband was not impressed.
Oh, I can imagine.
So all I can think of, it must have been the fresh air, being up in the mountains, not having a care in the world. Just plodding along and enjoying the beauty in front of you.
So have you time phrase on a timeline on your next wild camping trip?
Well, we're trying to do a surprise for my dad. I mean, I want to take him over to Ireland because he's 90 in February. So I'm arranging with family to see if we can go to Ballycroy and see them for his 90th. But then I'm going back to Ireland, hopefully in August, to do the Kerry Way, and I should be again while camping the whole lot.
Okay.
And that's going to take me about two weeks, I think.
No, but was it your first time in Ireland? Surely it wasn't, Angela.
No, I've only been to Dublin.
Okay, so it was your first time in Ireland.
That's my first time in Ireland. I mean, I flew to Knock from East Midlands, flew to Knock, and then as me travelled around, went to Westport, went to Ballycroy, Clan Kirkpatrick.
But it's your first time in Ireland outside of Dublin.
Yeah.
Magic. Yeah. Well done. You're a tonic. You're a tonic, Angela. You're a tonic. Well done.
I was catching trains. I'm getting around on the buses. And I've got to say, the transport is a lot cheaper than back here in the UK.
Oh, wow. Yeah, tell us. And there's a lot more of it. I don't know whether you came across this new fantastic local link service, which is, again, in rural areas. I know there's a mainline express service. But generally, I think people are saying that the transport in rural, public transport in rural Ireland has improved dramatically in the last few years. So you'll be back, Angela.
Pardon?
You'll be back. Would you not? Would your hubby? I know.
I'll be back next year. I'll be back on that Kerry Way, and then I'll find another way to do in Ireland.
But would you bring?
I've got quite a bit.
Would you bring your husband? I know everyone says he looks much older than you, but would you bring him?
No, he doesn't like walking.
He
doesn't like that. He doesn't like heights. He won't climb a mountain. He doesn't like heights.
No, Angela, I thought you were going to say he doesn't like me, but he doesn't like me.
He probably enjoys the peace from me, but he's not into doing what I'm doing, so I just did that.
Ah, magic. Stay there, Angela, and I'm sure your husband's a great, great guy. Bill Murphy, Bill.
How you doing, Joe?
Yeah, Angela, do you know who built those huts? The huts that you slept in.
No, I don't.
Okay, Bill's going to tell you. Bill, talk to Angela.
Well, hello, Angela. And just listening to your story there, it's really great to hear you had a good experience on the Wicklow Way. we're delighted to hear that. And it is the people and it's the scenery and the mountains and the forest that just make that a great trail. And I'm a member of Mountain Mel. We're a group of trail conservation people. We've been in operation since 2002. And we do a lot of trail work, you know, trail conservation work for the national parks.
Yeah.
And for Quilta. But we built those three huts that Angela said she stayed in. We've built them over a couple of years.
Well done. And what's the spec on them, Bill? What are they made of? And
they're sort of taken from a design that would be common along the Appalachian Trail.
Oh yeah.
So they're open sided. They're three sided huts, and they're open at the front. And there's a sleeping platform, and there's a fire ring, and generally we have a table as well that people can sit at. And they get a huge amount of use, and we have a little log book in it. I hope Angela wrote something in it, but you know, we've been keeping the log books for quite a long time since the first one was built in 2007. And you know, people write little pieces about their trip, and there's people from all over the world using the Wicklow Way and those huts. So it's we think they're a good idea, and we maintain them regularly. In fact, the one that Angela was talking about, Mullacore, we had a work camp during the summer where we replaced the roof and we did a lot of other work around it. So yeah, and thanks to all our volunteers, because you know they're all people that enjoy the mountains and they enjoy going out and giving something back to the trails.
And how many of them are there in the country?
Well, there's three in Wicklow that we've built, and then we built two other ones out in the wild Neffin wilderness in Mayo, near Ballycroy, where Angela said.
Okay.
So they're very remote, and people go there to experience the wilderness area and to see the dark sky that's around that area.
Of course, yeah. And who funds the... Because I'm looking at one now. They're pretty robust constructions.
They are. I mean, they're simple, and I heard Angela saying that there was no door on it, but you know, if you have a door, then people leave junk and it gets smelly inside. So they're meant to be shelter against the wind and the rain, but they're not meant to be for long term.
Okay.
So we get a lot of, you know, people give us donations. Some of walking clubs contribute to our work, and that's how we fund it. And all our labour is obviously free. And we try and cadge materials and get materials here and there to build them. Our work is kind of funded by other clubs who, you know, give us donations.
Well done.
And that, yeah. Yeah,
and what happens if four or five people turn up at the same time, Bill?
Well, they would sleep about, you know, at a push, five or six people.
Yeah, I see that.
They'd be fairly cosy, but you know, I think people have to, you know, respect other people, and if there's just too many, you know, they have to camp to be prepared as well when they go into the mountains. Yeah. And
insofar as you know, Bill, well, you might know from the logbook, is the Wicklow Way, I don't know, COVID had an impact, is the Wicklow Way more or less popular than it was, say, 10 years ago?
I would say more, Joe.
Okay, well, that's fascinating.
And in fact, I think, you know, a lot of people during COVID actually discovered, you know, getting out into nature. And we, you know, now that when we work on the mountains now, we have a work day every second weekend.
Okay.
And so we're out there quite a lot throughout the year. But, you know, the amount of people out walking and using the trails, it's great. A lot of people now compared to maybe 10 years ago.
Okay, well done. Well, great, great work, Bill, to you and your comrades and your colleagues and your fellow volunteers. Angela, there you heard, there's a hut over near, well, the hut's too small a word for it, I think.
Ballycroy.
Yeah, off you go. Okay, okay. And would Bill...
Well, can I just say, thank you for making them huts, because they are a blessing when you're out there at night time. They are a blessing to climb into.
You're more than welcome, Angela. We're delighted you enjoyed them.
And I did write in the book, and I did leave some food in the little cupboard.
Okay. And Bill, are we getting a lot of solo travellers like Angela? Insofar as you know, I don't know whether you...
I don't really know, Joe. I mean, you know, if you're out, you can see some people. Yeah, yeah. Generally, if they are solo, they're male travellers, you know, male hikers.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. But, yeah.
Well done to Angela for doing
super. Here.
Thank you.
And so say, thanks, Bill. And
it's
so
an amazing experience.
And you've given people an amazing insight into it. Angela, good to meet you, Mahaga. That's Angela Lawson, the Wicklow Way woman. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Deirdre, it's your son. It's the class of 2020. He was disappointed, I presume, but there is wisdom and lessons in the experience. What happened?
Exactly, yeah. I just, you know, I feel so sorry for people today, you know, because it is devastating and you're worried about your child, you're worried about them, you know, having confidence to go forward. And we went through all that. And the following year, again, because I didn't want to put pressure on him to apply again.
Okay, yeah.
I was kind of hoping he would, but I was also afraid, what if he did if he didn't get it again, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of tried to let him, you know, sort of make his own decisions and just gently. And he decided to reapply, and he did. And he did get it. And, you know, in the meantime, he used his time, did some very useful, appropriate experience.
Great.
And, you know, from back then, where you didn't know what was going to happen, it was all so upsetting. And here we are a few years later, lots of lessons. And he was resilient, he was persistent.
Okay.
And he's now going into his final year.
Magnificent. So the year of so-called disappointment was flipped into a year of opportunity and learning and life learning experience. And the main thing is he had the year. Do not let something like what's happened today to so many students, do not let it under any circumstances affect your mental health or those around you.
Easier said than done.
I know.
That's the thing. As parents, you know, you're just...
What's said and done in your case, what your son went through, the fact that he came through, the fact that the year, looking back on it, was valuable in terms of relevance and work experience and opportunity, that's the lesson we want people to hear today.
Absolutely.
Hopefully things will change quickly. Okay,
yeah.
Deirdre, good to meet him all. Good, Deirdre, and kind regards to your son as he prepares to graduate in his final year. Thank you, Deirdre.
Good luck to all those students
said.
Hopefully they'll find their way.
Well said.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The organisation is called Mountain Mehel. Nessa, you want to thank Bill Murphy and the group who built these huts around the country. Go ahead, Nessa.
I do. Hi, Joe. Hi, Bill. Both of my sons used them this summer. I have two teenage boys, and they wanted, one of them in particular was mad keen to go wild camping, but he was only 15, and we were a bit concerned that he would go without any real plan. Anyway, himself and his friend planned this, and they went off in June. And the agreement was they could go if they stayed in one of your huts, Bill. So they went as far as the one just above Lemelore.
And along, how many of them in the group, Nessa?
Just two of them, Joe.
Just two of them.
Yeah, now we were a bit nervous, but we sat down with them and they made a plan and they had their map and had far too much equipment and had it off on the bus down to Glendalough.
They're 15.
Yeah, they were. They were great though, and we had we'd made a plan with them and sat down and they had a great time.
Would you let them go across Europe on their own? But 15?
No, not like Kirsty Alsop. I probably would. Yes, not the 15-year-old.
Kirsty, and now the Child Protection Agency are on our case in the UK because it's 15.
It was only one night and we had a well-planned... Now, they're out of coverage with their phones and everything. Yeah. There is a lot of trust. But they had a great time.
I'll tweet a photograph of those at Joe Liveline in a few minutes. Those huts look absolutely fantastic for what they do. So I'm glad to hear... that mountain metal are so much appreciated. Good to meet them all. Good, Nessa. Harry Buckless on sound. Richie Burns, researcher, producer, Annette Egan. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end of season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers, and more. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.